Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, have you ever thought about hosting a radio show?
I've actually thought about it a lot, Jim, and I've even come up with a title.
Oh, yeah? What is that?
Mr. Patty's Uneasy Listening.
Well, that certainly sounds uncomfortable.
I don't know what that means.
That's right. All right, Patrick, this is exciting. We have a real professional with us in our midst today. Our show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Buster.
This is going to be a patron episode. Our patron today, our loyal listener, Keith Jacobson. Hello, Keith.
Hello, Jim and Patrick.
Keith is up there at his lake house in Michigan. We can see him here on the Zoom. And then Keith invited somebody else, the special guest, the professional I'm talking about. And so, Keith, why don't you introduce the special guest?
Sure, Jim. Today I invited, I invited a little while ago, not today. We didn't arrange things that quickly. I'm not that good. Mike Marone. And I think some of your listeners probably know Mike from 17 years at XM's The Loft. He was there at the launch, was the program director, a host there, has fantastic musical taste. He's been around music much longer than those 17 years, been in terrestrial radio, did promotions work for Ryko Disc, and I'm sure many other things in there, Mike. So here's Mike Marone.
Hey, boy, how much do I owe you for that, Keith? I want to make sure I got your name spelled right for the check.
We were talking about cryptocurrency earlier before, so I'll take Dogecoin.
I have no idea what any of that is.
Well, I invited Mike on because he's got a really cool project on Mixcloud, a show from the basement, which I believe is literally recorded in your basement.
It's from my basement.
It's from your basement.
Yeah, it's from my basement. And it's all right because my basement has always been a meeting place over the many, many years I've been doing this kind of stuff where even staff members used to come over and, you know, music meetings in my, because that's where I keep all my music. And so the funniest part, though, was that when we moved from Maryland to back home here in New Jersey, we were staying at my friend Joe's house. So even though it was still from the basement, I was actually doing the show from his living room. But now we're moved into our own house, and I am back in a basement again.
I believe Patrick is in his basement, and Jim is in his basement, too.
So yeah, I am.
We're right. Popular place.
We're that Absolutely. Age, aren't we?
Now, I find this a bit, though, ironic, right? Because you used to have a channel called The Loft, and now you're in the basement.
But you know what was even more ironic is that I used to do many of my shows for The Loft from my basement in Maryland.
Right.
So, yeah. And I even started this from the basement thing towards the end of my run at what became SiriusXM, just because I always wanted to have a hand in something different. Like, if I do any one thing for too long when it comes to music, I get very restless. And I like all kinds of different things. So I always have to have a side outlet.
Mm-hmm. Where were you in Maryland?
I lived in Ellicott City.
Oh, yeah.
I was about maybe not even 10 minutes from Meriwether Post Pavilion, which is, you know, just a great place.
Okay. Yeah. So we're on the Virginia side of of the river here.
Mike, can I ask you one thing? Can you just tell me, and I don't mean to be selfish, you were working at Ryko Disc? Because that was like one of my favorite labels.
Oh, it was
and
one
I
of,
have so many of their CDs.
Yeah. Same
what
here.
Do you need?
I mean,
I'm not kidding.
Why don't I give you my number?
No problem.
But seriously, tell me, like, what were you doing there?
Yeah.
I was to me, that seems like one of the greatest jobs of all time.
It was. It was the greatest job ever with tremendous people, all of them music fanatics like myself.
Yeah.
I was running the promotion department.
Okay.
Okay. But my daughter got ill. My daughter was a year and a half when we moved to Massachusetts. She's 26 now. So, you know, she got through it, but it was a very, very rough situation. Due to that was I couldn't go on the road the amount that I really needed to do the right job. And Don was at my basement in Massachusetts in Peabody, or as normal people would say, Peabody. And he always wanted a radio station. And there was another guy at the company, Lars Murray, who was very, very forward-thinking. We all were. I mean, we had Rio players and all that shit. And we wound up starting the first record company internet radio station. And I did it all from my basement in Massachusetts. Cool. But then Blackwell took the company over, took it in another direction. I still could have stayed, but I had an opportunity to start a radio division at what became a dot bomb called iCast. And they were right by my house. So I worked there for a year until I went to XM.
So at Rykodisc, what were some of the records that you promoted?
Oh, Golden Smog. I have my Golden Smog shirt on right now.
Nice.
Bruce Coburn, Bob Mould, Golden Smog, Josh Rouse, Lloyd Cole, who I love, Martin Zeller, Marta Sebastian, Nick Drake. All the Hannibal stuff was ours.
Yeah.
And really one of my favorite bands of all time, Morphine. I just fucking loved Morphine.
Great.
So, yeah, the music was phenomenal. I never wanted to work for a big label or a big corporation. Rykodisc and Rhino were the only labels that I really wanted to work for. Although I did do a little work for my former neighbor in New Jersey, in Old Bridge, Johnny Zazula, who's the guy who started Megaforce and signed Metallica.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a legend.
I was working for Gem Records at the time, the importer.
Yep.
And he had a flea market stand called Rock and Roll Heaven. And he would order from Jem.
Jesus.
And I'd drop it off at his house.
Time.
Oh, I can go back way further than that. But yeah, Johnny, I remember the Monday after he signed Metallica, he came back from San Francisco. And I hear this crazy knock at my door. I open it. It's Johnny. And he comes running in. He happened to say to me, "Man, I got this. I just signed the band. It's going to be the biggest band in the world." Now, I've never been a metal guy, like after I hit 16, I guess. And he pulls out this cassette from his jacket and he goes, "You got to put this on, man. It's great." And he puts it on and it's Metallica recorded from a Walkman type thing in a club in San Francisco.
Wow.
And it was it was just like horrible sound. It was just like screeching noise.
Hey.
And I said, "Oh, yeah, John. Yeah, yeah. That's good." But he was right.
But that wasn't your fault, man, because it was a bad recording. No.
Bad recording.
Let me ask you.
You don't still happen to have that tape, do you?
Oh, no. He didn't leave it with me.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Keith was kind enough to send us your website, and I was checking out a lot of your tapes or mixes, or I don't know what you call them. To me,
call them radio shows.
Okay. Yeah, they're mixtape. Yeah, mixtape radio shows to me, like a radio show combined with a mixtape. So
yes,
great.
Exactly.
So great. You know, I looked through a lot of your shows and all that, but I didn't have a whole lot of time, to be completely honest. But I really was attracted to, and this may be ironic, short attention span theater. So tell us
yeah,
about
that,
and what was your idea?
I like long form things. Mm-hmm. When I sit down to do something, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. That's my my philosophy in a lot of ways. However, we
That's
live
why
in
I
a culture.
Divorced.
Yeah, we live in a culture now. We live in a culture that has about a 7-second attention span. It's frightening.
Yeah. We just did a show about
TikTok. It really
is. So we know.
Yeah. Frightening to me. But, you know, like I say, there's no good or bad. It's whether you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah.
And just because you like it doesn't make it good and vice versa. But I was trying to think of, okay, look, I got to get something. I really want people to listen to the show. I don't think you're going to make $1 million at it, but I sure would like it to generate some income. And in order to do that, you know, I am going to be able to do what I want, but I also have to find something that is not asking for that much of a time investment on a listener's part when there's so many other things they could be listening to or watching or whatever. So I wanted to come up with something that was just under a half hour, concentrated on about 5 songs. I have had really good feedback on it where people like it. And I guess it's no different than anything else I've ever done on the radio. There's no difference whatsoever in the choices of why I'm playing what I'm playing. It's, I heard this week. I really like it. I think you should know it's out. Or another part of it is, there's, you know, reissues and remasters and re-recordings, and there's always a bunch of things that have come out that people are just not aware of because there is no one centralized place to go. So I'm trying to be like a little filter.
Where do you find that? I guess, how do you pull all of that together to find what's new? Because there isn't one source. What are your sources, Mike? What are your secrets?
They wouldn't be secrets if I told you, but I read everything and I am constantly looking for new music and what's come out. I feel like I haven't had a successful day unless I found something that I didn't listen to before or didn't know about before. I've always been that way, and I'll probably always be that way.
That's great. You mentioned that you're 65 years old.
Yeah, and just turned 65 in June.
Most 65-year-olds are not interested in discovering new music.
Most 35-year-olds aren't. Most 35-year-olds aren't interested in discovering new music.
That's right.
Yeah,
So what makes you a weirdo?
I don't know. I don't think I'm a weirdo at all. I mean, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't. But I've been obsessed with music since I was a very, very small child. I mean, my father was a big band singer, and he quit when he got married because he felt you couldn't have a family life and a professional music life. There's a lot of musicians in my family. Music was always played around the house. I was able to operate the family stereo at literally 2 years old. They said I used to sit in a playpen and twirl 45s around on my finger. Just that's how I kept myself occupied.
He wanted to play Chuck Berry's Promised Land.
No. No, Bobby Rydell. Oh. In fact, I grew up in Jersey, and I was so nuts about music. I used to watch Bandstand every day from the time I was like three. And my dad somehow wangled passes and got us into Bandstand. I have a picture of me sitting on Dick Clark's lap on the...
Please send us
I'll show it to you. I mean, I don't know whether if I pull it up. And also shaking hands with Bobby Rydell. I was four.
Please. Oh, my God.
I was 4 years old.
That's amazing. Oh, my God. That's incredible.
I don't know. You know, baseball and music, it's always been. Although I'll tell you, I'm really losing it for baseball this year. Starting this year, I'm an idiot as far as anything else goes.
So you started the Loft channel was then XM, right?
Yes, it was XM.
And was it your concept? Did they give you freedom in terms of how you programmed it? How did that all work?
They sent me, you know, airline tickets. And I flew down to see Lee Abrams and Dave Logan. And I was originally going to work with Jesse on her channel, Cross Country. And so I went down there. I had a really good interview. I knew a lot of the people in the building. When I was leaving, after meeting Lee, who I had never met before, and Lee was always like the antichrist to me because I'm a believer in freeform programming, and his Superstars thing kind of killed that. And I remember he said to me, he's a very cool guy, so you have any other questions? And I said, well, you know, Lee, I can't leave here without asking you. Since you're the guy that basically killed freeform progressive radio, you're telling me I'm going to have all this freedom. You know, why should I believe that? That's exactly what I said. And he goes, you know, I'll take that. He said, but it's not my fault that they're still doing the two for Tuesday bull that I came up with 20 years ago. And we're going to fix that. And he stayed true to his word. By the time I got home, they had said to me, well, you know, you're not going to be a music director. We want you to program a station. Can you come up with a programming where the main artists would be Joni Mitchell and Jackson Browne? And I said, well, can I include new music? Absolutely. And other forms of music, not just folky kind of mellow shit. You can do whatever you want as long as your center lane is that. I said, so you want a channel that's kind of center lane, Laurel Canyon, and then everything else around it. I said, yeah, I can do that. Okay, great. Well, we're going to call it Clean Air. I said, nah. No. Clean Air, everybody's going to think it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. I mean, no, you don't want that. And so what would you call it? I said, well, because I always have a pirate radio station going where I always have a format I'm trying out. I said, I've been thinking about The Loft. And the reason why I was using that name is twofold. The loft is usually the top of the building, a little higher than everybody else. And also, there's no walls. Everything's wide open, so there are no boxes. Getting music out of these tight little boxes that they've put it in, you know, it's either good or not. You either like it or you don't. But there's no reason why you can't play Joni Mitchell into Charlie Mingus into the Blue Nile. You know what I mean? It all fits if you let it. And so I said, The Loft. And plus, there was this guy many years ago in New York called David Mancuso, who used to have what he called loft parties. I never went to one, but the idea of it really stuck with me from the first time I started reading about it, where their whole premise was to get really good equipment. So you had excellent sound and musicologists mixing music together, just like I explained. I distinctly remember the meeting, because this occurred after I came down to D.C. I was in the room with Lee and Dave, marketing guys, and also the big boss at the time, Hugh Panero. And they're all looking at me like, you're saying call it The Loft. I said, yeah, if you're asking me, there's my answer. And he goes, you realize this building was the printing loft for the National Geographic. That's the building we were in. So it was kind of like really weird things happening where they were like, yeah, that's a great name. And so we used it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Keith, what attracted you to The Loft? I want to get that perspective.
Just to what Mike was saying. So, I mean, I love technology. I have a huge CD collection. I now have a huge vinyl collection as I've gotten back into it. And there is something tactile about taking that and putting it on, even in streaming, to pick an album. But you know what? A lot of times I like having somebody else pick that for me if you find sort of what you like. And so to me, The Loft sort of had a lot of different genres. It wasn't all one genre. And that's something that I really liked. Yeah. And it had a really great flow. And I think that, you know, what Mike is doing with From the Basement and Short Attention Span Theater. And I think it's still a continuation of that. Unfortunately, I think what The Loft is today on XM is not what it was. What was it like, Mike, back at the launch to just be sort of given the keys to a candy store, I guess, really is what I would call it. Yeah.
It was the greatest place to work, the greatest job I have ever had, or probably, well, at this age, definitely ever have. But not just, I didn't just feel that way. I mean, we had a great group, and we worked so hard. I mean, I never worked that hard before or since. And I mean, just a lot of hours. It was the greatest job ever until the merger.
Yeah.
So while you were there, you know, I know being a national, you know, satellite, right, to everybody, there are a lot of artists really, I guess, wanted the attention or, you know, wanted to do things with the station. You did a lot of loft sessions.
Yeah, I did. I did over 500 loft sessions while I was there. Yeah.
Who of all those, and I don't mean for you to pick a favorite because that's probably hard to do, but who really surprised you the most of an artist that you had come in?
Well, I mean, when you consider that he was new at the time, you know, somebody like Damien Rice, where I just said, man, this kid's from another planet. He's that good. He's like, he blew my mind because he was like Nick Drake, but modern. And there was just some amazing, amazing performances. Steve Pultz continues to crack me up. I didn't realize how funny he was until I had him come in first to like five or six times.
He's a really good follow on social media.
Oh, he's right. He's one of the funniest people on the planet. But I wasn't really surprised by anybody. I was blown away by quite a few and just impressed how much people were responding to what we were allowing them to do. Because what we were doing, I mean, I had the loft sessions had three rules. One, and this is exactly what I would tell them. One, play whatever the fuck you want. I don't care what it is. You're working on something. Play whatever you want. Two, say whatever you want. No censorship whatsoever. We are not going to bleep it out. You know, we don't have to, so why should we? And number three, we're going to use everything you do unless you ask us not to. That was it. And I remember the first time Ryan Adams came in Everybody was really afraid. Not me, but everyone, oh man, he's crazy, blah, blah, blah. He's never going to blow. I said, Ryan, we got some rules. And I gave him those rules. He goes, oh, cool. Want to get high? And he went out to the, you know, he went out to the bus. I said, no, no, I got to work, but later on. And there was some amazing performances, and they built that place to do that. That studio was unreal. The performance theater, Tony Masiello designed that, and it had the proper wood. It was mathematically perfect. You could configure it to sound like any kind of space. All the equipment was top-notch. The engineers were musicians. It was amazing. It was great.
I would have to say, and I think he's maybe on a couple times, but one of my personal favorites was Richard Thompson on a loft. So,
yeah. Our 500th loft session.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Do you like being your own boss again?
Oh, fuck yeah. I always have been, though, because whether I'm quote-unquote working for somebody or not, I'm very upfront. I'll tell you, look, this is the way I do it, and if you have a problem with it, I understand. Maybe we shouldn't work together. Yeah. There are certain people you work for that you would go through a wall for.
Right.
You know, without question. And then there's other people where you're like, you mealy-mouthed son of a...
Right.
Don Rose was really the best boss I ever had. And I'll tell you the truth. Dave Logan and Lee Abrams were also great to work for. There wasn't a day that went by that Logan didn't call me about something that he heard on the channel that he either liked... And more often than not, it was that he liked or he didn't like and wanted to know why I played it. And when I explained it to him, he'd go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. 9 out of 10 times, he would agree with me. But when he didn't agree with me, it made me stop and think and say, no, wait a minute now. He has a point here. You know what I mean? I'm not right all the time by any stretch.
You were right and still are right a lot, Mike. I can think of a number of artists that you've introduced me to, you know, to through the years, and I'm sure, you know, many others. So,
like who?
You know, I wrote down a couple of them, you know, and but I know there's plenty more. But like Matthew Ryan, he's somebody that I didn't know, and you have played him a lot on there. Will Hoag is someone I know. Some of the other listeners love Will Hoag. I'll say Not a Surf. They were somebody that on my radar. And they're one of my favorite bands these days.
You know, and that's weird because when they first came out, like Popular didn't really do it for me. You know, their first album, it wasn't until they put that record out with Ben Gibbard that is singing background on that I went, wow, how did I miss these guys? And that's when I got into them and immediately put them on the air. So, you know, that whole good, bad thing that I talk about all the time, there's only two kinds of music.
Right.
That can change. I mean, that could change.
Well, Mike, tell our listeners again where they can hear you today.
Just go to MikeMarone.com. M-A-R-R-O-N-E. MikeMarone, all one word, .com. Everything, all the links to everything are right there. I stream it through Mixcloud because they pay the artist rights.
Yeah.
Dude, now, I was checking out several of your mixes on Mixcloud. It's really good, guys. Go listen to that. I mean, I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm going for EPJ Sour Diesel, but I'll tell you, it's really good stuff.
You know, the whole idea is, I think it was you that talked about mixtape.
Yep.
Mixtapes are incredibly important in my life. And like anything, you have to have a great opening.
Yeah.
But you set a course, and it's how do you get from here to there?
Mm-hmm. It's like a new mixtape.
It is.
And it is free, but Mixcloud does this pretty cool thing where you can get extra content and also, more importantly, a lot more control over how you play the show. Like you can rewind it, you can download it, and you can't go below $2.99 a month. So that's what I set my price at.
Yeah.
So just to give, you know, some of the listeners just an idea, the latest episode of From the Basement was number 137. And I'm looking at your playlist and you go from, I'm just picking one part, from XTC to Stone Temple Pilots.
Right, because there's a remaster.
There you go.
To some Led Zeppelin.
Well, because they fit right after Stone Temple Pilots.
They do. Absolutely. They do. Yep. Steppenwolf into Childish Gambino.
James, I mean, America and Monster into This Is America and actually is in the same key. So that makes it an even better segue. You know, that's the whole thing. It's all about what's coming next.
This is not a 4-hour show. So this is what we're going to say is go to MikeMarone.com. You get find out all this stuff. You can listen to his shows there. You can buy the CD collection. You can learn all about him. Check that out. Thanks to Keith Jacobson for your support and for setting this up. Wonderful.
Thank you, Jim and Patrick. And thank you, Mike, very much.
A lot of fun.
Bit of fun anytime. Conversation. And maybe we can do it again sometime.
Yeah.
I'm always here, dudes.
All right. Sounds good.
Sweet, man.
Have a good one.
All right. Thanks very much. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us has been
Keith Jacobson
and Mike Marone.
Hey. Oh, sorry. I missed my cue.
We'll talk to you all later.
Now, 2001, okay? 30 terabytes. That was $1.2 million of storage.
Wow.
Yeah. $1.2 million.
You can go to Best Buy now and get it for, what, $75?
I have 95 terabytes right here.